You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
This is where Wisconsin wakes up. It's Daybreak with Brian Noonan and Jamie Martinson. Here are your hosts, Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. It is 6 minutes after six right now. A beautiful start to your Wednesday. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you're here. If you want to get involved with the program or talk to us about anything at all, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Don't forget, after 7 o'clock, you will get your first word of the day for the Accelerate Your Summer Multi-State Text to Win contest. So be listening for that coming up in a little bit. Jamie, working right up until the intro started. Everything all right? You good?
I had a bunch of emails I had to answer. Here's the problem with disconnecting early in the evening to go take the dog for a walk. You miss out on stuff. And then you realize when you get up and you open everything up that there was stuff that you probably should have handled the night before, or there was news that you probably should have kept an eye on. And, you know, it happens to the best of us, but sometimes you just got to put your phone down for a little bit.
Yes. I mean, that used to be more important with the news back in the day. Now news is happening nonstop. It's 24/7.
Yeah.
You can't possibly watch everything. That's why we got to have Parker just stay up all night.
That's right.
Monitoring things, updating the rundown every 5 minutes. We want the most up to date, up to the minute things have ready for
That's
us
right.
when we come on.
Can you handle that, Parker?
Yeah, I could start doing play-by-play if you want.
All right, you can take a nap from like 2 to like 4 every day.
Okay, I like this.
Okay, so 2 to 4, and then
anyway.
The rest of the day you're up, and then you're just watching the news.
22-hour day, that's not awful.
That's right, okay. We'll handle those 2 hours. You're on it the rest of the day for us.
But, sick. Okay.
I mean, it's essentially, you're right, it is a 24-hour news cycle, but...
There's no way you can keep up with everything. And also I do at like by 7:30, 8 o'clock, that's the end of the day. We've been up since 4. You know, it's like, okay, people need to, I think all of us, not just us, you and me,
everybody,
but everybody needs to take time and say, you know what, work is great.
Right.
But at the end of the day, We're all replaceable,
yes.
And you have to have a life, and you have to get some rest.
Yes,
thinking, man, I am perpetually tired.
And that was just it. I put my phone down last night about 9 o'clock, and this morning I woke up and I was like, oh, look at all of the emails that came in after like 9:30 last night. So there are people who are more tethered to their phones than I am. If I was getting emails that were of somewhat importance at 9:30 and 11 last night.
I'm not asking you to shout anybody out. I'm not, but let's be honest. Any of those emails that were sent at 9:30, 10, 10:30 last night, couldn't they have waited till this morning?
They probably could have, but I wonder if they kind of operate like I do, where I will send emails at weird times because... Well, and here's what usually happens for me. And I will sometimes schedule out emails to send like the next day at a certain time. I do that as well.
That's better.
I do that as well. But a lot of times if it's, you know, before 10 o'clock and it comes into my head, it's one of those things where I need to write it because I also know that other people will check their email like me when they have time, right? And if it's really, really important, I'm going to wait till the next day because I probably need an immediate answer. If it's just something that I can send out and I'm like, I need you to kind of ponder this, or let's connect on this a little bit later on, then I'll usually send it out. But that's usually because it's not a rush thing, right? Like, I know that they can get back to
me
when
they have time. But also, if you send it late at night, it's going to be buried by the next day.
And I don't expect them to usually answer. So if it's really important, I'm going to wait till the next day. If it's somewhat that, you know, I know we need to connect on something, but it's a little bit more leisurely, I'll send those out whenever. If it's something that I need a response on, but I know that there's a more appropriate time for somebody to get it in their inbox, then I schedule things. So it really just depends on my grade in my head of the importance of the email. These were some things that came in last night that I needed to handle for later this morning before like noon today. But now they're they're handled. So we're good. Yeah. No big deal. It wasn't an emergency. It was just questions I had to answer.
It just, I remember reading a number of business things and, you know, don't send emails after this
and that. I know.
And
there used to be etiquette. I don't think there's any etiquette on it anymore because we're all always on our phones.
Well, because we're expected to be available 24/7 because we've allowed ourselves to become, and this is with a lot of jobs. That's why sometimes I envy people who, you know, shift work.
When
you
yeah.
Because at the end of the shift, you're done.
You're done.
You walk away.
Yeah.
And, you know, our job is different. It is more of a continuation during the day. We're always watching stuff and doing stuff. But there is a point where it's just your job.
Yeah,
you know?
I know. It's hard.
I'm not singling you out. It's a phenomenon that's everywhere.
I think about these things, though, all the time, especially when I have conversation with friends or when we're talking about our work-life balance. And here's what I've learned. I also have friends who live in Europe. I have a really great friend going all the way back to high school who's been living in Scotland now for, I don't know, about the last 25 years. And her work-life balance, the fact that they untether and they have this, they'll just be like, nope, we're done for the day. They're so much better at it in countries that are not the United States. And they really are good at it in a lot of, especially in Europe. They're really good at just being like, nope, you know, they do a lot of 4-day weeks in some of those countries in Europe.
And they're productive.
As long as you
do an honest day's work when you're at work and you work hard, you do deserve to go home and not have to work anymore. It's like, I want to relax. I want to see my kids. I want to go to the grocery store.
You know? I don't really love grocery shopping, but the other day I said to Corey, because we do a lot of delivery to our house because of our schedule. And I said to Corey the other day, I said, you know what I kind of miss? And I literally thought he was going to have the big one, right? Because I looked at him and I said, I kind of miss going to the grocery store and doing my own shopping. And he goes, but you hate grocery shopping. I said, yeah, but it feels normal when I do it, right? Like having delivery does not feel normal to me. Even though it is a convenience for me, it doesn't feel normal. Going to the store, getting my own groceries feels normal.
It's one more level of isolation. And it is a convenience. There's no doubt about it. But it's one more level of us not having to. And trust me, I hate leaving the house. every time I leave, I can't wait to go back. But it connects you in some way to the rest of the world.
Right.
And I like to you know, pick my own apples when I'm at the store. I like to look at the steaks and go, I don't like to look at that one. I like to look at that one.
Now, after I'm there for about 10 minutes and I run into about 4 people, I'm usually like, oh, please bring me my sweatpants and that delivery again because this is too much. But it feels normal to be in the store and do things that other people are doing and not have my groceries delivered. And I will never complain about delivery service and I will never complain about having to tip because I am one of those people who is so appreciative of the actual service. But he had the Red Fox moment, right? Like where he's like, I'm gonna have the big one because I'm like, I kind of want to leave the store and do my own shopping for a change. And he's like, wow, okay. So he kind of knew at that point that I probably needed to disconnect a little bit and
you can disengage from everything else because you're focused on getting through the store quickly,
avoiding
getting around the people who are draped over the cart like they had their spines removed on the way in. The people who put their cart crossways across the aisle and are completely oblivious that there's other people. The screaming kids. Can I add one more beef to that list? The people who walk on the side of their cart.
Yes. Why do you do that?
I don't know. I've had just about enough of it.
Sometimes
it's one of my biggest. You guys know I'm bothered by pretty much everything. But
true.
This when you're they put a handle on the cart for a reason. You don't have to walk next to it like it's your girlfriend or boyfriend or whoever
it is. Now, I will say, I've done this before, but only in occasions where if I'm in an aisle, because sometimes you'll have your list, right? I go in with my list.
Always
I'm armed.
Got my list.
And because otherwise I end up with things in my cart that I don't need. But if everything is in the same aisle on the same side and I'm just literally going down, grabbing it and putting it in, I'll walk by the side of my cart to do that. But I won't do it if it's normally, right? Like if I have multiple things in a row that I can just grab and
sure,
put in.
There's always exceptions.
But otherwise, but I don't understand that.
Right. I'm talking about the people who that's their MO.
Because now you're taking up basically, because I think of stores as like traffic lanes, right? Like you've got some people going one way, you've got other people going one way. Why are you stopped in the middle? Because now you're holding it up for everybody. And so if you're doing the side on the cart thing and you're pushing, now you're taking up two lanes. You're essentially taking up both lanes of traffic. So you would be annoyed at a driver doing that in the car. So please don't do it in the store.
I know sometimes I catch myself going, dude, just take a breath and relax. But the breaths are very short. They're rapid succession.
Hard.
I don't take a deep in cleansing breath. It's like, come on, just remember there's other people. And then, I got to get this out. Everybody can, I think, feel for me. And you've had these experiences where people just ask you dumb questions, just really stupid questions, and I want to lose my mind. So I told you this week I'm moving my mom from one assisted living to another place. It's going.
Okay.
I got all the pictures hung up in the new place yesterday.
Wow.
So she can, the goal is when she comes in tomorrow,
it feels
which
like
is moving
home.
Day, feels like home.
Yeah.
So today it's going to be packing. But anyway, it's all fine. Moving sucks no matter if you're 25 or 85.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. Moving is awful. Well, now, because I'm doing most of the logistical stuff, Debbie and I are handling all of it. I get a call from my aunt the other day after I told her that my mom was moving. I just want to know, are they going to be giving her medicine at the new place?
What? No, that's not a thing.
I know. I had to pause and I had to go, all right, remember, this woman is also 80. Relax.
Okay,
I said,
all right.
Yeah, of course they're going to give her medicine. I'm just asking, will they be taking... I said, they're going to do... Why don't you just ask me if they're going to feed her there, too? Or if they have indoor plumbing. Will she have to go out in the field to take a... No, she's going to be fine. Everything... I'm like, just... What do you...
What did
you honestly think I'm going to take her somewhere and just like leave her in a closet like Harry Potter?
Did she think that you hadn't spent hours and time researching these facilities?
I don't know.
Were just going to leave her somewhere, like tie her to a chair?
She had the senior citizen thing of, well, I have a friend who lives in a place and they didn't give her her medicine and da-da-da. I said, well, I wouldn't put my mom in a place like that.
It was that she was concerned, though. It was very nice she was concerned.
Is it nice that she's concerned? Can't she just be concerned at home and live with the doubt that, somehow my mom's going to be mistreated?
I just love that she didn't trust you enough to make this decision for your mom.
Well, that's a family trait. Just get in line. But I'm like, are they going to give her medicine? What?
Yes.
So just for the record, in case anybody from, some government department is listening, yes, my mom's going to be getting all her medicine. She's going to be very well taken care of.
She's going to have all of the amenities that she needs in order to live, survive, including the medicine and food, in case your aunt's listening.
I'm not tying her up to a tree and just leaving her out in the woods. Anyway, hey, New Jersey is suing a ICE detention center. We'll get into all of that. It's Wednesday morning. This is Daybreak.
I'm Jamie.
On the Civic Media Network. Oh, she's Jamie Martz.
You're I'm Brian Newton. There we go.
Still the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. It is 6:22 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you are here. A lot to get to today, but we've been seeing the footage over the last few days of protests in New Jersey outside of Delaney Hall, which is where they have been holding ICE detainees. There have been complaints about inhumane conditions. There have been complaints about hunger strikes. There are all kinds of things. Well, New Jersey has filed a lawsuit against GEO Group. That's the private company that operates the Delaney Hall Immigration Detention Center in Newark, seeking a court order that would allow state health officials to conduct a full inspection of the facility, which it surprises me that that's not already a thing. You would think any business licensed in a state that houses human beings would be under some sort of oversight from the state authorities.
Right. We just need to send your aunt in.
Yeah, she got a lot of questions. Are they getting their medicine? Is she eating? Do they have indoor plumbing?
I mean, and I hate to joke, but I mean, honestly, it sounds like she's doing more of her due diligence than maybe this facility is doing with the state inspectors, right?
Well, but I will also once again reiterate, my mom not a detainee.
Right. She is exactly.
She's not living in inhumane conditions.
No.
Anyway, so the detainees and advocates alleged unsanitary conditions, inadequate medical care, spoiled food, psychological mistreatment. Some detainees reportedly launched a hunger strike to protest conditions inside the center. State officials say they were only allowed to inspect limited areas of the facilities, such as food service operations, and were denied broader access needed to evaluate health and safety concerns. That should be a monumental red flag.
Right. Yeah.
I also don't like this idea of privatizing jails and privatizing these detention centers, because once you're paid, there is no oversight.
Right.
We're hoping New Jersey can get some sort of, figure out what's going on in there.
Right. Well, and that's just it. But I mean, with the privatization of some of these facilities, this has been a dream of the Republican Party for as long as I can remember. They like the privatization, and I'm not going to say that there's not some Democrats who haven't been on that bandwagon as well. But it really, I think, deters how much control the state has. I think it deters how much the federal government has. And then you end up with issues like we're seeing in New Jersey. And by the way, this isn't new. This is exactly the same MO that we've been watching happen across the country with these facilities, right? Whether they're privatized, whether they're not, it's the exact same thing. And so, I'll give New Jersey some credit here, because they've been watching what's been happening across the country and they're not backing down. I mean, they're really not. And I can appreciate that, because the more that these facilities come under fire, whether they are state facilities, whether they're federal facilities, whether they're private facilities, and the more the federal government tries to interfere with these facilities, the more that these states are able to draw up their own playbooks as to what's been happening across the country. And New Jersey is obviously, they've taken some notes, right? They're like, we're going to bring our state officials in. They're taking that playbook from Minnesota right now. So good for them for making sure that there's some oversight here.
Well, and what's the, when it's all just for profit, which this is, and when you have the, mentality on one side of the aisle that these people who are being held there are the worst of the worst, even though we're finding a lot are not, not even close to being able to see the worst of the worst, but there's no incentive for them to treat these people humanely. And if there's no government oversight, they're not going to. As long as they're getting their checks, they're going to just do the bare minimum. It's basically, you're warehousing people. You're not. And as much as people scream about humane treatment when it comes to animals, chickens, pigs being jammed into warehouses, there should be that much outrage. Really, there should be more outrage.
More, yeah.
But there should be at least at the bare minimum, the equal amount of outrage when you hear these things. And see this footage.
This is a facility that can hold 1,000 detainees. So think about the amount of people who are stacked in there, and now we're being told that the conditions are unsanitary, the medical care is uncertain. I mean, think about what that is like in that facility and what that is doing to the people. And you got to imagine, and here's the other thing that I always go back to, it doesn't matter if it's adults or not, but you think about the effect that this is going to also have on kids that are being held in this facility. I mean, I don't understand. I understand that if you are an illegal immigrant and you need to be detained in a facility, but these are still human beings who have rights, and they're still human beings who deserve some actual comforts and, you know, food and the medicine and all of that, going back to that previous conversation.
Food and the bathroom and they,
all
they
of
just,
it. Imagine they're not how animals.
You, right. You know how crowded it is at when you go to a baseball game and you need to go to the bathroom. That's why people run up the aisle between innings.
Right.
Now imagine that just in a more cramped spot with 1,000 people.
Right.
And I'm sure they didn't budget in extensive bathroom facilities. I'm sure it's whatever state guidelines. You have to have this many for this many people. There's nothing extra in there. The whole thing just, it's cruel. But the cruelty has been part of the deal, right? The cruelty is what we've experienced in the way these are treated. And I don't have to apologize. I know most of our listeners know that everybody believes the immigration system needs to be fixed.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that while you're fixing it, you treat the people that are being caught up like they're animals.
It shouldn't be inhumane.
Or even worse.
It shouldn't be inhumane. And that's just it. And I know there's been arguments over the years of, you know, Barack Obama, he detained families. Well, yes, but the facilities were still clean. You know, they still had basic care needs that they were given in that process. So it doesn't sound like that's happening maybe in Newark right now.
No, and Newark itself is sometimes, if you've been to Newark, you know it feels like you're being detained somewhere unsanitary, but that's just you choose to be in Newark. All right, when we come back, Portage schools are going to put mental health at the forefront. It is 6:30. I'm Brian Noonan, Chief Jamie Martinson. This is Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
6:35 right now. Thank you for joining us this morning. If you're in Madison, listening on WMDX, or in Eau Claire on 93.5 The Tap, or in Wisconsin Rapids this morning, listening on WFHR, we're glad that you decided to join us. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. How important do you think mental health care is in elementary schools? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Very important in Portage because the Portage Community School District is planning to create an in-house clinic offering mental health support to students at school. The new grant is going to help the district provide a centralized location, quick access, and an open door to students who need help finding treatment. Studies show that rural districts face challenges in addressing student mental health because they typically have fewer resources and less access to experts and funding for students. That, according to Steve Goldberg of the WEA Member Benefits Foundation, that's a charity focused on schools, they awarded Portage $41,000 to help organize the clinic, train teachers, and offer counseling sessions on campus. They say, according to the head of the Portage School District, she said, mental health is a top priority for us. So that district serves about 2,100 students from kindergarten through 12th grade. And they're seeing an uptick, which is, it's a shame, a big uptick in anxiety and all sorts of mental health issues. And yes, I know they use COVID as a thing, that it's gotten worse since COVID. And I did see a lot more kids with, as they like to say, big feelings.
Yeah.
A lot of big feelings.
And, you know, honestly, if you're listening to this morning and you have a kid in K through 12, and I obviously don't want to dismiss college students either because the mental health services are very important for them too, I think this is a good thing, right? Because
100%.
There's so many families out there that, you know, as we talk about the healthcare and the state of, you know, trying to even get resources at this point, the fact that these schools are stepping up and saying, you know what, we want to take care of these kids, we want to help them, and these kids have a place to go where they feel like they can be heard, they can get the help they need if they feel like they're struggling, or teachers notice that they're struggling, that's always a good thing, right? We've, you know, and I've talked about this, both of my boys have dealt with mental health issues. They have, my younger son has debilitating anxiety. It took about 2 years for him to really accept the fact that he had anxiety. It took him about 2 years for him to accept the fact that he was probably going to need medicine for that for the rest of his life. And it took 2 years of his life because he literally wouldn't leave the house. And he woke up every day wanting nothing more than to not be in this world. My older son, we had issues with him as well, where he literally tried to take his own life at one point. And it was simply because, and we were present, let me tell you, we were there with him every single day. But it was just things inside of them that they felt like they couldn't get out, or that they felt guilty about when there was no guilt or shame that should have been involved. So the fact that these schools are able to offer this service, and because we were lucky, our insurance covered the mental health care that both of my our boys needed. And our older one, in fact, just the other day, about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, he said to me, he goes, you know, I have a counselor again, right? A therapist. And I said, no, but thank you for recognizing that you needed one as a 22-year-old adult and went out and found one for yourself, right? So I think that this is a great, great program.
Well, and the issue isn't always with the teachers or the schools. And I was very disheartened to see this a number of times when we had kids who definitely had issues. And parents, when the social workers would suggest, or the teachers would talk to the social workers and the admin, and we'd all come to a conclusion, okay, and the parents would come in and we'd say, this is what's going on, and we would suggest that they get some sort of therapy. And there's agencies that do it for free.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there, even if you don't, because we were in a pretty financially strapped district.
Sure.
But there were parents who just wouldn't do it. And some of it's cultural. Some
yes.
of it's shame.
Yes.
Some of it's, I mean, you and I don't know if you felt you had to justify, because I don't think people would think you weren't present for your children, but you threw that in.
You have to justify it, right? Because
right, you feel like so,
as a parent, you're like, what signs did I miss? When our older one told us that he tried to take his own life, we were like, we're here with you every day, right? You were still living in our house. How did we miss these signs? And then as a parent, there's this immense amount of guilt that you feel because you're like, oh my gosh, my kid's been struggling and life is hard enough as it is, that as a parent, you aren't able to recognize those things. And because when he was with us, he was quiet, but we thought it's because he was trying to contemplate life. He had taken a year off from school. His plans had completely changed. And we were like, okay, well, maybe he's a very introspective person anyway. And so we had noticed that he was quiet, but not acting any different. He was getting up, he was going to work, he was doing his thing, he was gaming with his friends, he was going out with his friends who lived in the area. And then all of a sudden, one night, Corey came home. It was about 1 a.m. He'd come home from the station in Baraboo, and here was our kid running by the side of the road at 1 a.m. in the cold, in the dark, with his headphones on. And it just was this thing, and it expounded in the garage with dad and kid and crying, and all of it came out at one time. And, of course, at the point, that time, he's 18 years old. So as a parent, your hands are kind of tied because they're legally adults, right? So it had to be him who had to make those calls to set up those appointments. And we did it with him every step of the way. But you do. You're right. It's an immense amount of guilt. And you do feel like you have to justify it because you're like, how the hell could I have been such a bad parent that I missed the fact that my kid didn't want to be here anymore?
Well, that's what made me so mad, that it wasn't – the parents were just, no, we're not going to do that. They don't need that. It's like, boy, and I get it. I come from a generation and a family of people who, you know, most of us have therapists. A number of us are on medication. There's a lot. But back then, you shut up, you sucked it up, you put your head down, and you just kept going.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I try to tell. I try to tell Molly. I try to tell younger people. I go, don't wait. Don't wait till you're, you know, till you're old to finally get help, because you waste a lot of time. It's scary. But according to DPI, nearly 60% of Wisconsin high school students report experiencing one mental health challenge, either anxiety, depression, emotional distress. State surveys found about 52% of students report anxiety, and I would venture a guess. And again, this is just a theory. But these numbers are probably the same as numbers were when I was in high school, but nobody talked about it.
Right.
So thank goodness that now we're more open about it, and we realize that, yeah, there are mental difficulties and people have mental illnesses, and it's not a character flaw. Just like we don't look at other things as a character flaw. If you have cancer, we don't go, right. Oh man, that guy got cancer.
Right. Right.
No, we treat it. And so now kids are open about it. And just like kids do, there's kids who will, you know,
sure.
Escalated and exaggerated, yes. But the majority of kids who you can tell, or they finally open up to you, it's legit, it's serious,
it
needs to be addressed. And since kids spend a lot of time in school, that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
And if parents get defensive and go, well, you're trying to tell me how to raise my kid. No, I'm just trying to help. Educator's job is to help your kids.
Yes. Yes.
And they do it in a number of different ways. And if Portage, and that, because Portage is not the only district where they're seeing these kind of numbers.
Right.
A lot of rural districts, a lot of districts all over the state, all over the country are going through the same thing. Portage is just being proactive. They thankfully got this grant.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope now, as it goes forward, it can be used as an example for other districts around the state to go, oh, all right, this isn't just throwing money away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's other districts, big districts like Madison, Milwaukee, and Eau Claire that already partner with healthcare providers to offer on-campus counseling, therapy, and then some behavioral health services as well, which then helps students, they also help those students then access care without ever leaving school. What I think, too, is an important discussion right now is the fact that for a lot of families, this is the medical resource, right? There are actually schools in this state that are partnering with hospital facilities and putting clinics in their hospitals so that students have some kind of health care as well, which is a
good.
I think it's great, but it also speaks of the sad state that we're in with our health care, our mental health care in this country, that schools are actually recognizing this and being like, you know, this, we're a resource for these kids, and we're going to help provide some of this. And granted, we're talking the clinics, it's minor things, you know, like illnesses, fevers, all of that. But the fact that these even exist so that our students and our families who have students in those schools feel like they can get their students taken care of. I mean, I think it's a sad state when that is the source of health care for a lot of our families.
I think it's horrible for on a lot of levels, but I also think, I don't know, I wonder how many, even if there was mental health care on your insurance, say,
mm-hmm.
I wonder how many people would still access it. I like that it's in schools, because the teachers and administrators and social workers, they see these kids all the time.
Yes.
And kids, you know this, I know this, kids can be a lot different at school than they are at home.
Yes.
You know, and vice versa. And the parents who think their kids, oh, everything's rosy all the time.
Yeah.
And so they wouldn't even be thinking about it. They'd just say, oh, you know, oh, that's Timmy. He doesn't, you know.
Right.
He's emotional.
I also love, too, when you talk about the mental health care, is that it doesn't even necessarily need to be for the anxiety, the depression, suicidal thoughts. I mean, some kids just put a lot of pressure on themselves, and sometimes they just need to have somebody to vent to. I was one of those kids, right? Like in high school.
That does not surprise me at all.
I would have loved to have these resources, because my person was my English teacher who had just graduated from college about 2 years before she came to our high school. So she was younger. She was about our age. She was also an overachiever, and she's still a very good friend of mine, because we were very close in age, right? Yeah. When I was a sophomore, she was only 2 years out of college. So we were fairly close in age. She was that person for me. And because we were such a small school, I graduated with 18 in my class, because South Dakota rural schools. I went from a school of 400 in my graduating class to one of 18. And so it was very much a different experience for me all the way around. But she was that person for a lot of us, because she had smaller classes. She knew us very, very well, because all of the classes were small in our particular high school. So she could recognize those things in us right away. So she was that person. But it doesn't even need to be for big things. And your point about insurance, if you are a parent and you are recognizing that your kid is maybe struggling, I will say this as somebody who's gone through this. sit on the phone. I know it's hard. I know you don't always want to sit on the phone on hold waiting for insurance. See what they will actually cover. Because for us, our particular insurance, and we've been very fortunate, our particular insurance treated over the years has treated mental health care just like regular doctor visits. So it was literally a copay, and that was it. Sometimes they consider it to be specialized medicine, so your copay, if you have one, might be a little bit higher. But a lot of times, your insurance will cover it as regular medicine. So be prepared to sit on the phone, because that's always fun. Ask the questions, and make sure that you know if you want to get that private care for somebody in your life, whether it's you, your kids, whatever. But I know. Nobody wants to sit on a phone with insurance.
And if you don't have it, there's county, there's county programs, there's state programs, there's ways to avail yourself of those kind of services. So do it. Well, we've got an artist who is suing FIFA. You know, the World Cup folks. Yes, art versus soccer in court. Why? We'll tell you about it. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. 6:48, you're listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Fairly solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
6:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Hey, you're playing The Doors. I have a Doors t-shirt on.
I saw the shirt on,
Thank you. Thank you for that. Doors were my dad's favorite. So, yes, I'm a huge Doors fan. I want to remind everybody that coming up after 7 o'clock, we're just about 14 minutes away or so for the next word of the hour. We're kicking off the multi-state text to win contest this morning with another word. So get that Civic Media app ready. Remember, you can win some daily cash prizes, a prize package to Wisconsin Dells, and then, of course, grand prizes of, $250 in gas and $250 in groceries. So definitely want to be ready to text in after 7 o'clock this morning.
I am ready. I've had the app for months.
Everybody
should
have had the app.
Just for today. Yeah, we've been telling you since January to get the app, but
that's
who
right.
listens? We should also tell you to go to Spotify, subscribe to the podcast. That would be great. How about you like Facebook? You like Instagram? So do we. So you could go to the Daybreak with Brian and Jamie pages and get all of those subscribed to. So much to do. This story hits close to home. One, because I am not a huge football fan with FIFA. But that's beside the point. Weiland is, if you don't know Weiland, he's a Hawaiian artist, and he does a lot of whales and dolphins and seascapes, and it's beautiful stuff. He paints, he sculpts, it's just gorgeous, and he's been known for murals all around, and there used to be a beautiful whale mural in Chicago, and as you drove up Lakeshore Drive, you could see it on the side of the building, and then progress came, and by progress, I mean we got to put up more buildings,
right.
And it blocked the mural. So now, in downtown Dallas, there was a mural of life-size swimming whales. Well, Weiland has filed a $25 million lawsuit against soccer's international governing body and others, saying that they illegally painted over it to promote the World Cup matches.
Wow.
So not only did they, it's not blocked because of construction.
Right.
They chose to paint over a piece of public art for commerce.
I mean, and this is a knowing act because this was this was huge. It was roughly 17,000 square feet across two buildings walls. So it wasn't like you just we accidentally painted over it. There's no way you could say that this was accidental. This was a masterful planned project to take down this particular to paint over this particular mural.
Painting over it is just it's like low-rent graffiti at that point.
It was there
for
30 years, Brian. This particular mural was on these buildings for almost three decades.
Well, then we've seen enough whales, Jamie. We got to tell people to come and buy overpriced FIFA World Cup tickets. We got to get them in. Football is life.
Now,
and I'm sure, football, soccer. Let's call it soccer.
Sure.
And if you're gonna be a purist and call me up and say it's football, I know it's football, but we talk football here.
Yeah.
And we talk soccer here. So that's the way it is. Anyway, so let's really monetize this World Cup soccer thing, and let's paint over art. And I don't know. I did not see the mural. I don't know how weathered it is after 30 years. But I know if you look between the buildings that have been up for a long time in Chicago and you still see the mural, it's holding up pretty good. I don't think Weiland is painting with watercolors that are going to smear on the side of a building in a storm.
It was amazing how those murals do hold up on sides of buildings. It is pretty incredible. But the area's World Cup organizing committee put out a statement and said that in place of Weiland's mural, new artwork is planned that, quote, captures this current historical moment and reflects the energy, unity, and global spirit surrounding the World Cup 2026. Also going on to say that a portion of the mural would be preserved. Well, it doesn't sound like a portion of the mural has been preserved at this point.
What part? Just the whale tail?
Right, considering that Weiland filed this lawsuit earlier this week in a U.S. district court, and he basically said that they did this without even notifying him or even asking for his consent. And he now is seeking $25 million in damages and says the lawsuit says that the soccer's governing body, FIFA, and other defendants hastily and irrevocably, there we go, destroyed a civic landmark to promote the World Cup. I just had to get my brain functioning there for a second. Now, FIFA, of course, Brian, says that they have nothing to do with this. You have to go to our organizing committee.
I don't know anything about it. Sorry.
You have to go to the locals.
We'll help you.
That's what they're saying.
FIFA, you are the umbrella organization, so you're going to have to hold it. And there is a law that was passed, a federal law, to protect visual artists from destruction or of publicly displayed work. So if you do a mural, and they don't, it's not like he showed up and did this mural 30 years ago without any consent from the city. They knew it was happening. They probably commissioned it. So they've got this. Well, that's protected. You can't just paint over it. And even if after 30 years, like you take it for granted, right? You've driven by it a million times. If you live in the Dallas area, you see it and go, "Oh, the whales. Yeah, that's pretty cool." It's public art. You can't just take it down. Just paint over it.
I mean, to me, some of the best communities and some of the biggest events that I've ever been to actually celebrate what's already there with combining it with that particular event or future or whatever. I don't know why we always have to just automatically destroy things that have been there for decades.
Old is old. Jamie,
like
nobody likes old. Nobody likes old people,
I like
old
art,
murals.
Though, but I like art.
Old bread.
I like art too.
And the little town I used to live in, and I know we only got a minute, Parker. I'll make this as long as possible.
Snappy. Come on now.
Yeah. Anyway, there was a big thing because we were getting three murals in town, and they were putting them, they just said, and they turned out great, and it's a big deal. And even now I haven't lived there in a while, but if I go back through town and I see the murals, it reminds me of that time and the excitement around it, and it just, all of that makes me feel good. But we're not allowed to feel good unless you are winning the Accelerate Your Summer Text to Win contest, which is coming up after 7 o'clock. We'll give you your first word. So be there. We've got stuff you need to know and so much more coming up in the second hour. I'm Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak.
I'm Jamie Martinson. 6:59 right now. Thank you so much for listening to the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.